Welcome to the program for Tuesday, January 8, 2012, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The second term of the Obama administration will include any number of performance management items, and one way that they will be looking at doing that is through the offices of the performance improvement officers. Matt Pister is the deputy PIO at the Department of Health and Human Services in studio with me to talk about what he's doing and the results of our PIO survey. Matt, it's great to see you in studio. Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having me, Francis.
Happy to do it. Talk about your office and how you fit into the CIO suite and the top level of management at HHS.
Sure. So our performance improvement efforts are centered around our performance improvement officer, who is also our assistant secretary for financial resources. So as her deputy, I tend to manage the day-to-day execution of our performance management structure. But by having her as the liaison through our budget and other coordination processes, it creates the holistic structure that we can try to manage budget and performance together, balance those two things in a productive way.
Now, we're seeing that a lot more across government, where for a long time the performance improvement officers, or before there was a formal PIO office, their equivalents were focused in other areas, but that's becoming performance is being tied a lot more tightly to budget functions. How does that play out when you're involved in conversations with the other CXOs at the agencies, the chief acquisition officer, chief information officer, and so on?
I think it's all part of the process from a balance. The budget itself has a lot of factors that go into it. And setting the expectations early on based on what the budget levels are, what the expected performance can be. And so in being in conversation, coordination with all those other entities allows on the front end to make sure the plan is sound, given all the constraints that are in place, and then trying to work to make sure what we execute meets the expectations of the plan that was set initially.
How has your role and the role of your office evolved, changed over the last several years?
So it kind of started out in the last couple of years as maybe more of a consolidation and more of a focus of our efforts from the perspective that HHS is obviously a very large department. And so we have many optives and staff divs, operating divisions and staff divisions that execute the work overall. And so previously their efforts were, though coordinated across the department, all were reported separately. So much of our efforts over the last couple of years has been to consolidate that all within our annual plan and report so that there is one place that you can go to and see the performance overall. But then from a department perspective, we have a better understanding of where everyone is in relation to each other and also how their coordination and how their programs support each other. And so that's kind of been the last couple of years. I see now with our work through our agency priority goals, as well as some other areas, as really setting the foundation for continually driving performance improvement. And so that's kind of how we've been transitioning over the last couple of really over the last year to begin to put that structure in place in focused areas with the priority goals, but to serve as the foundation that'll really drive performance improvement across the department.
Are you starting to get a sense yet of how that will drive better results?
Fundamentally, what we've learned from our priority goal process is really the importance of collaboration. When we've selected our current priority goals for FY12 and 13, we're really focused on making sure that they involved multiple operating divisions so that they required collaboration, but also because those tend to be the issues that are more important, or at least are important enough to drive that coordination across. And so that's kind of been a big part of what we've learned and what we've seen as the value in that. By getting the operating divisions together, working together and getting the wealth of knowledge, the good people we have there working together can get so much more done than maybe some stovepiped efforts that individually are important, but can't drive as much as of an improvement as we would want them to ultimately.
Now, when you talk about trying to hit goals like that, is it just a case of the classic, we're trying to knock down stovepipes and get interaction going among different parts of the agency, or is there something a little different or more complex or more challenging there as well?
Well, I think from a HHS perspective, a lot of the problems we're trying to deal with are complex issues. I mean, if you look at, you know, diseases, infections, mental health issues, they're not as simple as we fully understand everything about them and all we need to do is put a plan in place to fix this or to improve this. Because they're such complex issues, it takes a lot of different perspectives, a lot of different information. And so by having that collaboration, I think that drives the improvement because any one of those operating divisions or portions of them may not have all the information necessary or may have their perspective changed just by coordinating with other groups who bring different perspectives.
We are, of course, right on the edge of everybody seems to be calling it the fiscal cliff. I hate that name personally, but we're there anyway. And we've talked about the interaction between your office and obviously, as you mentioned, the PIO at your agency is also essentially the chief financial officer. Is that what's the benefit of that, do you think, to the agency long term that someone that is so tied to what's going on performance-wise also has a pretty tight rein on what's happening money-wise?
I think it's, goes hand in glove, and you can't have one without the other. If you just look at performance, you don't really know what to expect unless you take the budget side, the funding side, in from the starting point. The focus should be and really is on prioritizing where the budget needs to go. And once that's done, it's can we execute on that budget that exists? So balancing those two things is always incredibly important. And at some level, it will reside at one person or one group of people who need to make those balancing decisions. There will never be enough resources. There will always be issues that can be worked on. So prioritizing those, giving the adequate level of budget and having a plan in place is the starting point, and then making sure that the performance corresponds with that or, adjusting as necessary when you find that performance is maybe not what you had hoped for, not meeting your expectations. Is that, a process or something that can be improved? Is it simply a matter of putting more resources towards it? Any number of those issues, and those are hard decisions to make, and, fundamentally, it's great to have one person or one group of people that create that balance between the two.
I mentioned that our Federal Performance Improvement Officer survey is out. The results are posted on federalnewsradio.com right now. When we come back, Matt, I'd like to look at the survey a little bit and see how it fits with the experience that you're having in Health and Human Services. Matt Pester is the Deputy Performance Improvement Officer at the Department of Health and Human Services. My guest today on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Back in a moment on In Depth with Francis Rose.
The Washington region is made up of powerful people and powerful places. And now there's PowerJobs.com, a career site made just for Washington's top talent. Brought to you by Federal News Radio, Politico, and ABC7. PowerJobs.com specializes in jobs in Washington's most influential industries. Defense, energy, finance, government, healthcare, technology, and more. From companies like SAIC and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Finally, a career site made for you. PowerJobs.com, empowering today's top talent.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Today is the day to make the switch, to choose to save money with Ackerman Security Systems. Why Ackerman? Security is what they do. With Ackerman, you get the professionalism of the Washington area's only UL and CSAA 5-Diamond Certified Monitoring Center for just $18.95 a month. If you're paying more, you can switch for free and start saving today. Why wait? Call Ackerman today and receive up to 3 months of basic monitoring free. Call 888-999-1070 or AckermanSecurity.com.
Welcome to today's lottery drawing. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering it. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Take your big ideas off the back burner. With HP Converged Infrastructure Solutions, you can spend most of your time and IT budget on your mission instead of IT operations. Servers, storage, networking, security, and management software work together to accelerate IT, greatly reduce application provisioning time, and get you ready for the cloud. Plan your strategy with HP Consulting for faster implementation and execution. The power of HP Converged Infrastructure is here. Learn more at hp.com/go/federal.
I love my husband, but I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon family groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you can learn in an Al-Anon family group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-ALANON.
Congress gave female contractors a present just before the holidays. Lawmakers voted to lift the monetary cap on contracts awarded to women-owned small businesses. I'm Emily Kopp. On Wednesday's Federal Drive, a female business owner shares her view. And we'll look at agencies on the vanguard of social media, find out who gets props in a new report on tweets and apps. It all starts at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And for the latest federal news, check out federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest today is Matt Pester. He's the Deputy Performance Improvement Officer at the Department of Health and Human Services, talking about the Federal Performance Improvement Officer Survey. The results posted now at federalnewsradio.com. Some demographic information here. The agency PIOs that responded included 71% from small agencies, 14% from cabinet agencies, and 14% from large agencies. 71% of the respondents were performance improvement officers, 14% were deputy PIOs, and other senior-level performance managers, 14%. Career employees were 85% of the respondents, 15% political appointees. And the first question, Matt, that I want to call your attention to is the sixth on our survey. OMB's attention to performance management has 71% responded has increased over the last 3 years, and 28.6% responded it's stayed about the same. Nobody said it's decreased over the last 3 years. That's probably not a shocker. But does that fit with what you're seeing, the fact that OMB is just paying a lot more attention to performance improvement?
Yeah, it's very consistent with what we've seen. I think the primary, or at least the first one that comes to mind, is just performance.gov. So that being one of their primary vehicles for focusing on and communicating performance improvement. And so we've been very much engaged with them from our perspective in updating our information for them and engaging in that process because we see it, I think, not to speak for OMB, but I think they see it as a valuable communication tool as well as to communicate the successes across government. And I think from our HHS's perspective, we see it as well as the same thing. So it has been, I think, a good process, increased attention, increased level of effort, but valuable in being able to, one, communicate the progress that we're making. And also, again, I think it's a great way to help engage the individuals or the healthcare facilities that, from our perspective, create the information that ultimately gets populated in that. I think when you look at some of our priority goals, for example, around like healthcare-associated infections. So if you're a healthcare provider who is providing the information on, you know, in many cases, you know, a negative outcome of some of the care that they provided, being forthright and reporting that can be a difficult process. But so knowing that it's part of a larger process that others are doing the same and that we're seeing progress, we're seeing improvement, we're seeing the reduction in those rates, I think will be incredibly important to engagement and making sure others can be motivated by the work we're trying to do.
It sounds like one benefit to the more transparent data through performance.gov is that you know everybody else is going to be transparent too, and so that the point of this is not to find out how your performance is so we can beat you over the head. It's to find out how your performance is so we can upgrade where we need to upgrade. Is that fair to say, do you think?
Yeah, I agree, and I think that's the totality of it, or the comprehensive nature of it is important, because if you're ultimately providing information that says you aren't meeting your expectations, but you're the only one providing it, that's a very uncomfortable position to be in. But so when you present it amongst other agencies or other operating divisions from our perspective, and you are able to communicate it in a holistic manner, here are the positives as well as the negatives, I think that's a much more useful means to do it, because then you can actually get to the point where you're saying, okay, amongst the areas that we aren't succeeding as well as we planned, what can we do to improve them? Of the limited resources we have, are there places we can put them, or is it simply something we're going to try and have to work harder to improve our processes and try and gauge that performance to get it improved?
The data that goes to performance.gov, they just got a big upgrade. More data is going there than ever. What do you see as the future of performance.gov as a tool for your agency to be able to harness all of that information and have people sort through it and maybe present that information back to you in ways that you hadn't thought of before?
So I think we have looked at it, like we talked about earlier, from the priority goal perspective of being collaborative and knowing from the department perspective, where are the areas for collaboration, where can it be improved, where are connections that we may not have identified already. So through our process, we've been able to identify those. Well, the obvious, extrapolation of that is now if you're looking at all priority goals across the entire government, you may see other areas for collaboration you hadn't noticed before. It might be something you see in looking at another agency. It might be something they see. And so that could be incredibly useful if there are those areas for collaboration to combine a goal or partner on a goal, because I think then you'll be able to drive more improvement because more resources towards it, but also there may be certain parts of the issue that one agency may not be able to actively engage on, whereas another agency may have either the responsibility to do so or the ability to do so.
Two issues I want to ask you about when it comes to data, managing data. One of them is volume. How are you able to manage the volume of data that you have, and do you have the resources that you would like to have to be able to do it? And the other is hygiene. Talk about the volume question first.
Sure, and I think that goes back to something we were also talking about earlier of just consolidating our efforts. We have really about 1,000 overall performance measures that we actively manage, but a subset of those that we're really focused on from a GIPR Modernization Act perspective. So being able to consolidate that into something that we can more focus on as a department, very useful in actually getting a manageable amount of information to gauge. And then that kind of leads to the next part of, well, then how do you maintain it, in that by having those more frequent conversations and those more frequent views on a smaller set of information allows you to maintain those to a higher level. And then the other measures, while still important and while still tracked, spend a little bit less time on, and so you can use the resources that you have accordingly. I think from a data perspective, there's always a desire to have more, and from a resources perspective, it's always nice to be able to have more folks engage on it. But at the same time, constraints are what they are. So I think by giving people areas to focus on, by prioritizing and communicating what those priorities are, it lets people realize, if I only have 10 minutes to look at something, this is what I'll look at instead of looking at multiple things to a lower level of detail.
The hygiene of the data is the other element that I think is getting a lot more attention now, making sure that, especially when you're going back and reviewing data that you've held for a long period of time, maybe it's been collected in kind of a legacy manner rather than a more modern way. How are you reviewing your data to make sure that as you feed it, that it's exactly what you want it to be, that it's as clean and accurate as possible?
Well, I mean, I think that's always been part of our process from a department level, in that we have, because it's a large department and we have multiple operating divisions collecting data, that's always been a part of their process to make sure they are working through the data, making sure it is of a necessary quality. And so it's really just been more about trying to manage the expectations of having the data now versus having quality data. And so it's really balancing those two things, trying to get the information out there, trying to support the desires to see it, while at the same time not putting either incorrect or, you know, poor quality data out there. And that's the nature of the business, and it's always something that I think something that has to be balanced.
Matt Pester is the Deputy Performance Improvement Officer at the Department of Health and Human Services, talking about performance management at his agency in the context of our federal PIO survey. You can see the results at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, and we'll be back to continue our conversation in a minute. This is In Depth, Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
The Pentagon is sending small military teams to Africa to help deal with growing insurgencies in the northern part of the continent. In the meantime, officials in Mali say Islamists who seized the northern half of the country are moving closer to areas under government control in the south. The insurgent advance was noted recently as Al-Qaeda-linked militants used bulldozers and other heavy equipment to construct hideouts in northern Mali. Now there's concern they could take over the whole country. I'm J.J. Green.
Airmen, we're on our way.
At EADS North America, we help our country respond to emergencies and natural disasters.
We see you. We're coming in.
From coordinating communications to medevac and emergency response, we provide the mission-critical systems our country demands. Every day, we support homeland security and defense missions here at home and around the globe.
Mission secure. ETA 10 minutes.
EADS North America. Commitment defines us.
Listen to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, every Friday morning at 11. Brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Fed Talk features live interviews with guests from the federal community sharing their insights on issues that affect you. Call in or email questions or comments to fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. Fed Talk is sponsored by GEICO. This week on Fed Talk, host Bill Bransford will be joined by the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund to discuss law enforcement trends and statistics from 2012.
Diary entry, August 15th. My joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
I need some answers. September 3rd. I'm tired all the time. What's going on?
June 8th. I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
Federal employees receive 15% off select Sprint monthly services and for a limited time may be eligible to receive a $50 service credit when they switch a line to Sprint. Visit a Sprint retail store in your area and mention where you work to find out if you are eligible, or visit Sprint.com/Fed. That's Sprint.com/FED.
Coverage not available everywhere ends 4/10/13, subject to 2-year agreement, activation and early termination fees and other restrictions. Service credit will be credited within 3 invoices. Restrictions apply.
Running less risk. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. You can't improve your health by going back in time and switching to a different set of parents. So whatever risk of heart disease and stroke is in your genes will have to stay there. But there's a lot you can change. Researchers have said that deaths by cardiovascular disease could fall by half if everyone took control of these preventable risks. at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Amy Valderrama tells what they are.
Things that you can change would be high cholesterol, high blood pressure, diabetes, smoking, eating a diet high in saturated fats, cholesterol, and sodium, being physically inactive, and being overweight or obese.
Regular checkups are also important. An article on heart health and risks is in CDC's Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfus.
The Association of Government Accountants National Leadership Conference is coming February 12th and 13th to the Ronald Reagan Building and International Trade Center. AGA's NLC is the training event for developing and training government financial professionals to excel as leaders in today's competitive government market. Don't miss this opportunity to share best practices, to find solutions to shared challenges, to network with your peers, and to learn from the top financial management leaders and industry experts. Register today at agacgfm.org/NLC.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Looking today at the results of our Federal Performance Improvement Officer survey, you can find those at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And I'm talking about those results and the experiences in performance management at the Department of Health and Human Services with HHS's Deputy Performance Improvement Officer, Matt Pister. We've referenced a couple of times your agency's high-performance goals, so let's lay them out there and then talk about some of the results of the survey in the context of what you're doing. What exactly are you focused primarily on at HHS right now?
Sure. So we have six priority goals. One I mentioned already around healthcare-associated infections, reducing the rate of those. Also, increasing the use of electronic health records for meaningful use, as well as increasing the number of healthcare centers that are certified as patient-centered medical homes, reducing tobacco usage, smoking usage amongst individuals, reducing the rate of salmonella enteritidis in outbreaks in the population. And then also increasing the quality of early childhood education. Those are the six.
Now, the process of determining those six, we could probably do a whole show just on how you got to those six, because there are so many things that HHS does that one or another group could argue is really important. But once you settle on those six, what was the next process then in the context of the administration's priorities on the structure of performance management? What was the next step that you followed to lay those out and to get the individual stakeholders in the agency to work on them?
So after selecting them kind of more of an internal way, making sure we had the right internal party set up, then obviously coordination with OMB to make sure their concurrence on what our plan is, because as you said, you for every six goals you choose, you could probably make a strong case for 60 others. But getting that agreement from the perspective of these are valuable priorities to focus on, and by achieving these or achieving strong progress against these, that's a valuable progress to communicate, and that's something that will resonate beyond just, you know, internal HHS or even internal to federal folks, you know, just the general public being able to get on board and understand those as valuable, meaningful goals to achieve. And then just executing the process of the quarterly reviews to make sure we are progressing as expected, following our plans, updating our plans as necessary, to both feed the data perspective of performance.gov, making sure we can provide the necessary information, but also just internally making sure our processes are aligned, all the contributing partners are being able to add their portion to the goal, and then making sure that we are progressing as we do get the data in, that it is tracking with what the plan was, and in the cases where if it isn't, making sure we understand what the drivers, what the factors there are, and identifying areas for improvement or areas for change that are necessary and, you know, are achievable by us.
The seventh question in our survey is, the focus on my agency's high-priority goals have improved the mission area 40%, not made a difference 40%, not sure 20%. It sounds like, from what you're saying, that you would go with the improve the mission area selection there. It sounds like it's had a positive impact on what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I seeing the results of the survey, kind of, as I'm sure you noticed, it raises more questions, or it makes you want to ask other questions for
yes.
clarifying purposes. So I can kind of see it from both perspectives in that I absolutely see how the collaboration and the coordination and the focus has been able to move our goals forward. And so it has been a valuable process. At the same time, I think a lot of it is just shedding light, communicating the good work that's already there. And so, you may see it from a leadership level or at a level of detail you hadn't seen it prior to that process, but it doesn't necessarily mean that progress and that hard work wasn't happening already.
Yeah. Question 8, I also thought was pretty insightful, and it's another one that, as you say, makes me want to ask a bunch of other questions of the people who responded. Question 8 is, the administration's evidence-based approach to analyzing programs is, 42% said working well, 42% said not sure, and the rest of the respondents said having some effect on the program, but what I thought was insightful is nobody said having a little effect or not working well. So overwhelmingly, it seems that this evidence-based approach is really making a difference. Are you seeing that?
Yeah, and I think that's something we've tried to focus on from the department's perspective, both in our goals and just in general, making sure there is a strong evidence base where available in the programs that we're executing. Or identifying where gaps exist and trying to build up that evidence base. I mean, I think that's a pretty logical way to look at things. And I think, there's a strong evidence base that's out there. And again, gets to that whole collaboration perspective. If, there's information out there, if there's an evidence base that's out there that you're not aware of, for any number of reasons, it doesn't do you a whole lot of good. So being able to communicate both how you're using it, but then making others aware of that may, shed light on where areas that they could use that same evidence base to improve what they're working on.
And I guess it takes us back to what we talked about before about the data and the quality of the data, too, because if your evidence in the form of the data is something that you can be very confident in, then it really helps you make decisions on how to proceed.
Yeah, and I think that's maybe another part of the balance between budget and performance is, if we're going to make decisions that have far-reaching impacts based on our budget and we're going to use performance data to do that, we want to be real comfortable that the data we have is accurate. And so the better it is and the more evidence you can point to, the historical data that you can provide to show the improvement can be incredibly valuable in making that case when you do get to those budgetary and hard decisions that happen.
Two quick points about the next two questions, both of which seem to fit with the experience that you're having. Question 9 is, my agency has performance metrics and measures so we can do quality analysis. 85% agreed with that. My agency makes good use of our performance data. 71% agree with that. If you had to say ways that you would like to see your ability to work with the data improve. You're already working at a pretty high level, but if there is room for improvement in that area, where do you think that improvement would be? What could you do more or better, or what would you do if you had resources to do more or better or whatever?
Well, I think this kind of points to another area for kind of the growth and the challenge perspective is OMB has put out their structure around strategic objectives and annual review and setting up a process to do that, which I think can be incredibly valuable in that it'll provide a more comprehensive view. And so if you are doing data analysis, you're doing it across the board or maybe in certain subsections of related information across the board. And so you can get a more comprehensive view. At the same time, that's very ambitious, it's very broad, and it can be quite a challenge. So coming up with a process to do that, to implement that in a way that the reporting and the coming up with the data doesn't become a full-time job, whereas it's more of an outgrowth of actually doing the work of executing the program and then reporting on it becomes a more seamless process, which is, again, never going to be, a zero effort, but making that as small an effort or as efficient an effort as possible, I think, in managing that will be incredibly challenging, but also incredibly valuable when it's put in place.
We've talked a lot about collaboration within HHS and how these performance measures are driving that. When we come back, I want to talk about how you're interacting with other organizations in government, OMB, and some more of the collaboration stuff. My guest is Matt Pister. He is the Deputy Performance Improvement Officer at the Department of Health and Human Services, talking about the results of our Federal Performance Improvement Officer Survey. The results posted now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, and we'll continue our conversation in just a moment.
Are you a loyal credit card user and your only reward is a high interest rate? Anyone can join State Department Federal Credit Union and take advantage of their Visa Platinum credit card. Just a 6.99% APR, plus earn one reward point for every dollar you spend. And there is no foreign transaction or balance transfer fees. Visit sdfcu.org. Annual percentage rate is based on evaluation of applicants' credit. SDFCU is federally insured by the NCUA.
I'm Beyonce with an important message about hunger in America. Did you know 1 in 8 people struggle with hunger? Over 12 million children live in homes where there isn't always enough food. Food banks are experiencing more demand than ever. Show Your Helping Hand is a nationwide campaign with the goal of helping Feeding America deliver millions of meals to local food banks. Please join me in showing a helping hand to fight hunger. More information is available at showyourhelpinghand.com.
Who are the top leaders in the federal government? Federal News Radio wants to know who has inspired you and what qualities do you think make a great leader? Nominate someone today. A top leader can be someone who knows how to motivate a team to success or a mentor to younger coworkers. A top leader can be anyone. You tell us. Nominations will be accepted through January 8th, and finalists will be announced as part of a Federal News Radio special report in February. Find the nomination form at federalnewsradio.com. Search Top Leaders.
Newsmakers on In Depth with Francis Rose.
The first vendor has made it through the FedRAMP accreditation process. Dave McClure is GSA's Associate Administrator at the Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies.
This is the first time cloud products are really being put through some rigorous security evaluations. So we're learning a lot about how cloud computing models and services and platforms fit into the government context.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, reviewing the results from our Federal Performance Improvement Officer Survey. With Matt Pister, he's the Deputy PIO at the Department of Health and Human Services. Question 11, Matt, has to do with TxDAT sessions. We asked if PIO offices are participating in those. 57% of our respondents said never, 28% said often, and 14% said sometimes. And I have to take away from that the level is of involvement across government is kind of spotty. If we talk about the collaborative process and embedding it earlier in the management process with the CXOs across government, what would you like to see culturally that would drive that would make people think maybe earlier than they do now in other offices across government that, hey, these guys are our friends. They are a terrific resource that we already have inside our agency, and they're here to help us do something that maybe we're not experts at. We're experts at whatever it is that we do. They're experts at managing the performance elements of everything the agency does. How would you like to make that relationship tighter?
Well, I think it starts with just the culture of making it acceptable for plans or for programs to not meet expectations from a perspective that, things change. A lot of the problems we're trying to solve are very difficult, very complex. You start with a plan, and you can't just look at the plan 2 or 3 or 5 years later and expect to get exactly where you thought you were going to get. So just setting up a culture where people acknowledge we're going to look at this periodically throughout the process, and we may not find exactly what we hope to find when we do. And that's okay, because that's part of the process, And when you're stretching to try and solve these hard problems, sometimes the first plan, or at least 100% of the first plan, is not going to be successful. And so putting that structure in place, that culture in place, where people are willing to have some level of, I don't want to say failure, because it's not failure, it's just not as much progress as you would hope to achieve. But so putting a process in place where people are comfortable not only communicating that throughout, but from the beginning, acknowledging, you know, we need to get other folks involved and set the expectation and, you know, put a plan in place that, with the knowledge we have when we started it, we think it's reasonably has a strong success to strong ability to be successful. And then moving from there, acknowledging that when we find out we aren't getting where we thought we would get, there are other resources available to help us get there, not to communicate negatives to leadership or something that's going to, you know, derail an important program that is a priority, that was funded because it's a priority and is an important outcome that we want to get to.
Maybe the worldview or culture change that you're talking about, though, is bigger than either one of us thought when we started this part of the conversation, and that is government seems to be pretty black and white. If something doesn't end up the way that it was laid out at the beginning, then it's somehow wrong. And maybe the concept that we should be looking toward is it's just different. It's not wrong. It's just we got a different result than we expected, and how do we either work with what we have or roll it back and try to get the direction that we want to go. Does that make sense?
I think it does to a certain extent. And I think that's kind of part of that beginning planning process of setting the expectations of where you're going to get to and being able to communicate that. Because, you know, one, that gives people a better idea of where you're going to get to. So there is no miscommunication of, well, I thought you meant this, not that. But also sets up the really how complex the whole process is, that when you're trying to plan for an outcome on a program 2, 3, 5, 10 years down the road, to be able to accurately say with, you know, full clarity that this is where we're going to be in 10 years and, you know, we are 100% confident that that's going to happen, nothing is going to change, no outside factors are going to have any effect on this, is, you know, would be really hard to say. Mm-hmm. But when, if everyone's part of the conversation at that beginning point to really understand, you know, these were all the entering assumptions that we had when we come up with this plan, and it turns out that this one changed and that's why this is different, I think it makes a better conversation that all the stakeholders involved understand, yeah, this is what they said in the beginning and something changed. It's not, well, they didn't tell us what the plan was in the beginning, and we didn't get what we thought would come out at the end.
Mm-hmm. We just have about a minute left. Question 12 has to do with collaboration. CFO's office, Chief Human Capital Officer's office, and business and mission offices each received 100% response to the question, my office often collaborates with. CIO's office was a little lower, CAO and Secretary's office both a fair amount lower, and you can see all the results at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Is there a role or a responsibility for the PIO office to communicate with all of these folks, just to say, if nothing else, we're here, we're able to help you, we have the resources and tools to be able to help you drive performance?
I think there is. It's kind of a push versus a pull, maybe. I think in our case, because our CFO is our PIO, it kind of makes the bridge somewhat naturally, in that, you know, through the budget process, the PIO has to engage with everyone else and vice versa. At the same time, I think there's always room to engage more, let's say, maybe out of cycle, or just more directly on certain areas, because, you know, the budget process tends to be pretty structured and, you know, reoccurring every year, and there are certain questions that you ask in certain parts of the process that occur. It doesn't always take into account some more farther-reaching perspectives that, you know, some of these areas or some of these offices may be interested in exploring, you know, 5, 10, 15 years down the road. And so making sure those outside conversations are happening I think is important too, because that's all part of putting a plan in place and seeing if you can get to it.
Matt Pester is the Deputy Performance Improvement Officer at the Department of Health and Human Services, my guest today on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Looking at the results of our federal PIO survey, you can see those results, as I mentioned, at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And we'll wrap up our conversation in just a moment.
BYOD. The employee owns the devices, they bring them into work, and then they hook up to the local network. And so this whole movement toward portable devices is actually transforming all of IT. And there are a lot of opportunities there. All the security related to BYOD, bring your own device. A lot of security issues, security policy relating there. Application development for all of these items. It's a very, very big area.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
The best of the Atlantic 10 Conference comes to the Charles E. Smith Center in Foggy Bottom in 2013. Get your GW Basketball Conference plan today and watch the Colonials take on Temple, Butler, Dayton, and more. Get all 8 conference games for as low as $80 when you visit gwsports.com/tickets or call 202-994-7325. GW Basketball. Raise high the Buff and Blue.
Trust your home and family safety to Ackerman Security Systems. Why Ackerman? Because security is what they do, and they do it better than anyone else. You can control your system remotely. Get texts, emails, even video clips of events going on around your home. Whether you need a basic system at $18.95 a month or the latest technology, call Ackerman Security today and get up to 3 months of basic monitoring free. 888-999-1070. AckermanSecurity.com.
Take your big ideas off the back burner. With HP Converged Infrastructure Solutions, you can spend most of your time and IT budget on your mission instead of IT operations. Servers, storage, networking, security, and management software work together to accelerate IT, greatly reduce application provisioning time, and get you ready for the cloud. Plan your strategy with HP Consulting for faster implementation and execution. The power of HP Converged Infrastructure is here. Learn more at hp.com/go/federal.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Deputy Performance Improvement Officer at the Department of Health and Human Services, Matt Pester, is my guest to talk about the Federal Performance Improvement Officer Survey. The results posted now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And, Matt, as we look at the budget situation that the government is in and what how that is impacting performance management, what do you expect to see, regardless of what happens in Congress and what happens with all the extraneous things, just focusing on inside your agency, what do you expect to see as far as any landscape shifts, priority changes, not with the goals per se, but just the way that you execute on trying to meet those goals, anything like that in the next, say, year to 18 months?
Well, I mean, I've always seen performance management as an opportunity to drive improvement, to just look for efficiencies, look for ways to do business better. So from that perspective, the fiscal constraints, other things that are out there, I think just provide more emphasis for why performance management is important and why it's worthwhile to focus the attention that we do on it. So my expectation, or at least my hope, is in the next year and change that we'll be able to just identify more of those areas for improvement to again, improve the actual performance of the programs we're executing, and hopefully it'll also provide a means to minimize some of those financial constraints. If we're, regardless of what the amount of funding that we start with is, if we're being more efficient with it, we'll get more out of it. And so that's, I think, always going to be a valuable perspective for performance management to bring. So to the extent that maybe some of the external factors provide more emphasis on it, or at least provide more value for it, I think that can be an incredibly valuable thing to increase over time.
As you reviewed the responses to our survey, did anything jump out at you as surprising, thought this was weird, happily surprised, anything like that?
Well, I think one of them was the question on performance.gov, and that it was, I think, pretty I think it was about 100% response that really kind of undetermined on what people's perspective on it was, whether it was positive or negative, which I don't think really surprised me from the perspective of much of what's been out in performance.gov to date has been more informational, just and somewhat static from the perspective of here are the programs, here are the priority goals, here are cross-agency priority goals, information that's out there. So that doesn't surprise me. I think knowing the improvements that have been made, the additional data that's now available and will continually be updated periodically, my expectation is that will change significantly, and people will start to see it as a useful tool. My hope is that kind of maybe people haven't already determined the value, and that they recognize, yeah, this is a work in progress. This is something that's going to get better over time as we as a government get better at this over time. And so, I would expect to see that number change significantly. And so I think that's another area to look at.
So you think that number may just be it's a little too early to tell kind of number?
That would be my perspective, yeah. And that raises the kind of a follow-on question would be, what do you think you'll get from this in the future? I'd be interested to see if people kind of conceptualize what the value would be to them already, or if it's more of a if you build it, they will come perspective, yeah. And that as they see the data, they'll begin to see the value.
Yeah, well, and maybe the next question that I would think of, too, is what would it take to make it something that's going to be helpful to your agency's performance improvement?
Yeah, and that's the whole iterative process, right? You know, it's start with this. Here are some good things. Here are some things we could get better at. Here's some information we wish was on performance.gov. I think those are all great conversations to have. I hope that they happen just because I think it's just a great way to communicate the good work that's happening.
Well, hopefully this conversation will get some of that dialogue going. I've really enjoyed having you here. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thanks for having me.